question the voices of resin I hear. Oh, plastics.
Plastics is an SPE-sponsored podcast.
Hey, how's it going?
Welcome to this dark room at Antech.
You know, yesterday we were recording in this gorgeous boardroom up on the 20th floor. Today we're in the basement in a closet, and our guest thought she wanted to make sure that we weren't going to beat her up.
She actually asked not to lock the door, so we have it propped open for reasons.
If the lights go out, you know, everything's going to be fine.
We're okay. I think we're actually in the tornado shelter.
Oh,
I'm Lindsay Neville.
I'm Mercedes Landazuri, and with our powers combined, we are Plastics, the voices of resin.
We are here at Antech again.
We're here at Antech, still at Antech.
We got a couple more episodes to record, and who knows if they will be in a basement or in a gorgeous boardroom. It depends. It's a surprise to all of us, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have a very special guest with us today. I met you when the person I was with told you, oh, Donna Davis.
Yes.
Said congratulations, and I said, oh, did you get honored service member? Which is a nice, you know.
Which is a nice thing.
It's a great thing. It's would love to get that, but.
But then, as the habit with all our guests, made it even cooler.
Yeah, the Plastics Hall of Fame. So
Plastics Hall of Fame.
So I think you're the only woman in this class of inductees.
This round, that's correct.
For 2024, and we're looking forward to that at NPE. But anyway, I didn't actually introduce you, so
we got too excited.
Typical, very, very us. So this is Wendy Honig. She is the CEO at H&H Business Development. So thanks so much for joining us in this little crowded.
It's great to meet you guys. Watched a bunch of your, listened to a bunch of your podcasts and enjoy them, and great to be here.
Thanks so much.
Well, so congratulations on being inducted in the Hall of Fame, because it is super cool, and we like when we can personally say we know someone being inducted, and then we just will use your name as bragging rights for the rest of the year. So
decades to come.
It's probably gonna be a lot longer than a year. So just. If people say it, it's fine. So what does this mean to you personally and professionally to be inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Wow. When Maureen called to congratulate me, I was just overwhelmed.
Maureen Steinwell called?
Maureen called. She was one of my sponsors, along with Tim Womer. And so I've always admired these guys. These guys have been kind of role models for me. Mm-hmm. I've been in Plastics Pioneers now for about a little over 10 years, and working with them and watching them with their medals, and they come in and they talk about the hall.
Very fancy.
It's a culmination of a career, you know, and a passion that I've had, you know, and since I started in 1986 with Dow. So it's honored and humbling experience too. So I'm excited.
That's amazing. And you mentioned Plastic Pioneers. For our listeners who don't know, can you, because you're the president right now.
I am the president this year. So we are kind of a three-legged stool, three things that we stand for: scholarship, fellowship, and history of the plastics organization or the industry. So we give back scholarships. Last year we gave $60,000 in scholarships to 20 students that are going into plastics industry. So we're giving back to the next generation. And fellowship, it's kind of started as a golfing and get together and have a good time twice a year, but that's kind of evolved into helping name the scholarships. And then lastly, when UMass Lowell Plastics Museum went under, we didn't know what was going to happen with all those plastics artifacts, and we didn't want that to disappear. And so Glenn Bill, with his generosity and PPA, we endowed that to the Syracuse University. And so we take care of that, so in perpetuity. So those are the three things that we do with PPA. Yeah.
I love that. That's close to me. I should go see that.
It really is cool. You should see it. So.
So sorry. So you mentioned Dow. You were at Dow for about 25 years.
I was.
So it was one of your first.
I was right out of school. Yeah. In fact, I did two internships beforehand. So that's a really important way to get into industry, is to do those internships. You get to see the culture of the companies you want to check out, and they get to see you do your thing. And they invited me back full time. So I went in straight after I got my bachelor's degree. and kind of worked my way through and up through the industry, went between R&D, TS&D, or technical service jobs, to business jobs, kind of went back and forth. And so I kind of made my career on being an integrator, translator, with my material science background, but also my business acumen. And so kind of worked my way back and forth between those disciplines over the years.
And I think when you were with Dow, you and or your R&D team won four
R&D 100 awards. So very proud of the teams that we worked with, from polypropylene kind of base resin kind of things to more downstream plays like Enclosia and Dow Fiber Solutions, etc. So yeah, four R&D 100 awards.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you've won some awards since then.
Yeah, one more from Peak Nano for R&D 100. So multi-layered films, a couple Edison Awards for innovation, and the women breaking women breaking the mold from Plastics News. That was a big surprise and an honor for them in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess I'm the only woman not breaking the mold in this closet. Both of you have it.
But it's just a matter of time. The paperwork's in.
So can you share a memorable experience or project for your time at Dow beyond the awards that you feel like has had a significant impact on your career?
You know, I think one of the things that I'll just tell you about kind of multiple projects. One of the most important things it did in the transition of Dow Chemical Company to what's now Dow Inc. was this acknowledgement of we needed to be facing the market more. And so in the Ventures and Business Development organization that I was running as technology director and then later as business director, we were doing all those assessments behind the scene as looking at global megatrends in the industry and saying, what do we need to do to align our technologies, not just come out with whatever cool new polymer, but whatever offering we could put through it from the power of the Dow Chemical Company. Mm-hmm. And so that really served as the baseline for them now to be aligned into what's now the PAC Studio, the packaging group that they do. And they do all this market facing kind of industry alignment. And I think that was a very powerful thing to help in that transition. And it helped everybody's mindset, all the researchers, all the business people, to kind of go, we need to be doing this differently in the future.
Really keeping those megatrends as a North Star.
Yeah, exactly. So it's better than just doing products offered. It's far better from a positioning standpoint and overall value creation.
And I think that speaks to like your really strong background in business. And you know, you also have that background. I'm trying to think of a different word, but I just like
entrepreneurial studies.
There we go. So you've launched a lot of new businesses, a lot of product lines. You know, what are the key strategies that you identify? You know, kind of mentioned the megatrends and keeping that, but like, what are the things you use to identify, develop those winning technologies?
Yeah. So we did a whole series of things, and that's what the Ventures and Business Development Group was really all about. Was if you don't love something at the beginning of a project, it may not fit necessarily in a particular business unit, and they may not want to be funding it because they're running the businesses, right? So we were an organization where it was kind of central, corporate, kind of big things that we wanted to invest in, big ideas and big technologies that were being developed, and we either spin them to a business in partnership with them, or we spin them out for a licensing kind of play. So there were a whole series of things that we worked on over the years that were quite different and innovative, kind of challenging the old school way of doing things. And we did it successfully, I think, because we chose to have business teams, people that were on the business already sitting in those evaluations. So it wasn't a run over to the fence and say, hey, I got this cool new thing and throw it over and hope for it to live and do well.
Right.
It was more of a, we're doing this in partnership so that you can grow the next great thing in your business. And so I think it was far more successful because of that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think too many times, you know, one silo or the other goes with the new product, and then it's like, well, that was a flop. And it's like, yeah, was it a flop because of you, maybe?
Or the way we tried to do it, you know, or the methodology we had in place. So that we were that, I'll call it incubator, to love the baby till it was kind of a toddler, right? And running along and doing great. And then you give it to the business or you give it to a licensing partner and say, hey, this is great. It's going to make you a lot of money. And they can see it, they can feel it, right? The whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, digging way deep into the Google stalking that we did of you, back in college.
That's your favorite activity.
That's how we met, basically.
Pretty much.
But back in college, you, at Rice University, you, I believe, were the captain of the football and softball teams. Is that correct?
I was.
And, you know, and I will tie this in. But I mean, obviously, you know, when you're playing competitive sports and especially in the role of a captain, you have to be a mentor of sorts. You have to be a leader. You mentioned Maureen Steinwall is a leader of yours. Obviously, you're involved in a lot of these associations. So mentorship seems to be a big part of your career. How do you approach mentoring, and what advice do you typically give to mentees?
Yeah, mentoring is such a critical thing, to be mentor of someone and to be a mentee. Even today, as old of a lady as I am in industry, I still have my people that I go to. Maureen, still, I feel she and I have a great rapport. But I think that chemistry that you build with the person that you're going to interact with is so special. And you can have multiple mentors. I was out at Texas A&M University this past week doing a talk about, you know, kind of what do you need to do to prepare to get into industry, these students. And there were about 75 students in the classroom. And I told, one of the things was mentoring. Mm-hmm. And I said, it's so critical that you find that person you have that chemistry with. And it can be for multiple things. I had three different mentors that were really impactful in my career at Dow. One was a lady that kind of talked to me about, you know, growing up as a woman, as a strong leader, and being a mom and working mom and all the things. And so I kind of interacted with her in that respect. One was a guy that was one of the best people leaders I'd ever worked with. Just an amazing guy. He knew the technology, he knew all the industry, but he knew the people and he knew how to get the best out of the people. Mm. And so he was my people management. And the other guy was kind of my sciences partner guy originally, but he was really my scientific mentor because he knew intellectual property strategy. I learned a tremendous amount about patenting and patent strategy for him. And so those five people that you find that are in your life, and you kind of walk through different people over your life career.
And enriching different facets of your career.
Absolutely. And so I tell them, I said, find those people that are special to you. Mm-hmm. And then remember to give back on your own. You're going to become the mentor, you know, as you walk through your career, you become the mentor. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we give back, right?
That's beautiful.
Yeah, and I think it's important to recognize that you're saying, you know, you can be the mentor and mentee at all the points in your life, no matter what's going on. Like, even I've had students that have been, you know, SP does the mentorship program, and they've said, well, I am not really interested in mentoring. And it's like, well, you could, for the record, you also have stuff to offer. You are, you know, older than some of the other students, or even students in your own age group. Like, they might have something to gain from your insight.
Yeah, I told the students I was talking to, I said, you know, even after 2 years, you're going to be an expert in an area. You may not feel like it, or it may not seem like it, but that next, you know, brand new guy walking out of school,
right,
2 years down the road. So you can be a mentor. So I said, take the opportunity, seize it. So
no matter what your imposter syndrome says, you're technically the expert.
Yeah.
So. And, you know, not to go on and on about your awards, because they are wonderful and amazing, but circling back to your awards, you know, how have these awards really felt when you receive them? How does that influence, like, how you interact with your team, or how you interact with, like, the, you know, rest of your daily life?
Yeah. Well, I take them very much to heart, in that I need to make sure that I'm being that representative leader and being involved in the groups that I've been recognized by. So I take that as a very important part of what I do, and it's part of kind of why I'm here and interacting in industry, kind of giving giving back and wanting to get more involved now in SBE. It was probably the one place that I haven't spent as much time in the last few years. I've been in and out of SBE and Antex and MPEs and things over the years, but I absolutely think that it's important as a woman to represent. Mm-hmm. There's not so many of us that are in the hall, or that's in the PPA even for that matter. So I think, you know, letting people see that it's possible. I mean, you show them the possibility by being a strong leader in each of those organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And speaking of leading, you founded this company, H&H. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more about the company and the role it plays in providing technology and business assessments for private equity, venture capital startups?
Right. Yeah. So my husband and I, after we left Dow, his group was being sold off. So he retired officially and went to another organization. And I was kind of standing saying, all right, what's my next chapter, right, for myself? And I really didn't want to go back into the corporate environment per se. I wanted to be more entrepreneurial. That's what I was doing, adventures and business development, when I retired. And so I said, you know, that's what I'd kind of like to continue doing. I enjoy that, the technical sales piece of this whole thing, technical assessment, but I'd love to work more in the startup community or in the private equity, kind of spinning out these things that were kind of recipients of some of the things that we were throwing out mm-hmm. from Dow, right? So I said,
I know where this could go.
This goes. So in 2010, I decided I'm just going to hang my shingle, right? And I'm going to start the company. And so ever since then, we've been doing technology and business assessments. So before private equity or before funding agents will put money down, they'll come to our company. Mm-hmm. And we will do those assessments for, you know, what kind of value can you really get? How does the technology really feel, look, taste, you know, kind of, and see before they put big money down. And so that's kind of the space we work in.
Yeah.
And occasionally, part of my business model, I said, would be, we might jump into startups somewhere along the way. Hmm. And so we've done that, my husband and I both, two different times. We moved to Austin and we jumped into a carbon nanotube startup to help them get off the ground.
Oh, wow.
Where we could play officer roles or significant project leadership roles to help them commercialize and get to money.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did it again with Peak Nano in Cleveland. We moved to Cleveland for a year and we immersed ourselves in doing that with them. And so then we pull back and I run the company again, mm-hmm. look for the next great chapter. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, Peak Nano, I'm a big fan. they do really innovative stuff, but I worked on some projects with them and it was like thinking about color or wavelengths in the non-visible spectrum and like designing like how it was like,
they're doing some spectacular stuff because I told them, I said, this is teaching old polyethylene or polymer trick dogs to do new things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Optics, you never seen where you create a film that's 4,000 layers thick, just a film, you stack it up 300 or 400 mm-hmm. pieces high, you mold it, now you have 1.2 million layers in an optical lens to shine through. It's amazing.
Classic
new tricks, you know, so really cool stuff. And then capacitor films, they have a whole division. So it's really out of the box,
yeah.
Something that you typically don't see. And so that's what kind of piqued our interest.
Mm-hmm. Right? So pun intended.
So speaking of cool stuff, like the stuff that Peak Nano does, what are some emerging trends or technologies in the industry that you find extra interesting or promising? Because I feel like if you think it's cool, then it's got to be like,
we should pay attention.
We should pay attention. Yeah.
Well, this whole sustainability thing, there was a question earlier, what does sustainability really mean?
That's a great question. What does this even mean?
Yeah, it means the whole plethora of things that are open to it. And that's the beauty of it, is it's from recycle to, you know, the whole advanced manufacturing, you know, taking it back to pyrolysis to you know, bioplastics. It's a whole plethora of things, but we've been developing these technologies for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we can take them off the shelf where they're really needed,
mm-hmm.
and really implement them and put them out there to create new value for companies in the future. So that's That's one thing that's just huge. The other one was we were standing there talking about advanced manufacturing.
Oh, right.
So additive manufacturing versus injection molding. There was a great presentation earlier today. He was doing contrast between injection molding and additive manufacturing and how do you get the most out of each one. And it was one of the best talks I've seen in quite a long time, but I think that's going to fundamentally change the way industry works in the molding side of the plastics business. So,
So, what advice do you have for professionals who are looking to transition from a corporate role into more of an entrepreneurial role or consulting in the plastics industry?
Okay. Wow, it's a huge transition.
How scary was it?
It was a little scary. But I had been kind of working in that space, kind of entrepreneurship within a corporation, but you kind of still have the protection of, you know, the major corporation dollars, and you can do different things along the way. And
you got your health insurance.
But wow, when you put yourself out there in the startup, it's all you, right? It's all the funding that you have to go get, and sometimes you have to take out the trash, and you know, sometimes you have to clean the machinery up. You know, you're wearing a myriad of hats. You don't have some of the support network that you had in a large corporation. You don't have some of the analytical support. You don't have some of the things.
Resources too.
Yeah. So it's a very different experience. It's also front end, a lot more ambiguous, a lot more, every day's a little bit different challenge and fun. And so for people that are comfortable in that environment, it's spectacular. It's a wonderful thing. For people that are more on the optimization and every day I want it to be the same, don't jump out there. It's overwhelming. It's not where you probably want to be. So I tell people to really know yourself. Mm. Know, you know, what's here, you know, in your tummy, in your gut. What's the most thing that motivates you?
It's getting panic sweats all over.
Exactly. So if you know yourself well enough to put yourself in one of those or you know, multiple along that value chain, you'll be successful in those. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I mean, a couple of people who talked today also had a similar path. We heard about how Glenn Beale got laid off from a corporation a year in, and David Tucker, who gave that additive manufacturing presentation as well, you know, and moving from that to their own startups. You're in very good company.
Some of the customers that I worked with early on in my career, the Bemises of the world and Landis, who became part of Berry Global, and you know, all those guys that were my role models were those entrepreneurs. They were those guys that started at the original companies, and I always had so much respect for them. We worked real well together, and I always thought, you know, someday I'm going to go do that on my own, strike out on my own. So it makes me proud that I can kind of honor their pathway that they helped create and continue on that.
And I assume you could always reach out to them for advice too.
Yeah. So for those that were, that are still around, of course I do, like Glenn's of the world and Tim Womer and those guys that have been out there forever. So they're good friends, and I know I can always count on them and reach out to them, which is great. So.
That's really nice. And like,
are you gonna cry, Lindsay? Like, you're gonna cry.
Do I? Well,
it's just,
I think
it's just
weird
the lighting.
I was gonna say, I don't think I'm gonna cry. I think it's nice. We mentioned how few women we see in the hallways, even with, you know, the strides the schools are making, and you know, I think
never aligned for a bathroom at a plastics company.
Never
a female's room at a
especially
plastics
here.
Conference.
The bathrooms are enormous.
Yeah.
But what are some things that you think we could be doing to help support women in this industry? Encourage more women that like come in, the water's fine, kind
right.
of vibes.
Yeah. I think one of the things that we've definitely worked on is again the scholarship. Going back to that piece of it, we've made sure that we. Get those ladies, you know, featured very quickly and into the organization. We make sure that they get their internships, and we're not preferring them over, but we're making sure there's even amounts of opportunity for them to be successful in internships, because unless you can get out there and see what an engineer really does, and this goes back, frankly, it goes back to junior high. We lose a lot of girls going from elementary school to high school. Somewhere in there, we lose them to math and science.
Oh, yeah. A lost me. I didn't come to it until in my 30s.
I mean, we lose them, and that's on us, you know. That's on us to get out there and tell them STEM is cool. And I think all the things that we're doing from the foundation to get Plastivan and videos, everything we can do to keep them interested and engaged and, you know, saying, I can do this, you know.
Yeah, I was just explaining to a group of guys that, you know, I did all the like engineery things as a kid that, you know, we say like, oh, look for this, look for this. But nobody ever came to me and said, you should be an engineer. Mm. When I said I wanted to go into arts, they were like, yeah, that makes sense. See you later. And then I stumbled back into engineering, thankfully, right before I went to college. And I was like, I think I'm going to give this a go. And I almost missed it. And I didn't have any engineers in my life. I didn't have anyone doing that. How many of these girls at that age are we missing because nobody's pointing it out?
We lose them.
And it's...
Yeah, I was very fortunate in that respect. And I alluded, my dad worked for Dow. So he was chemist. And so he was, you know, the ramrod behind that. But my mom was an entrepreneur. She had four different companies. And so I grew up...
You were made for this.
Yeah. I grew up from, you know, scrubbing the floors to, you know, doing a few books here and there. And working, you know, all the things that she did. And so I had a right brain, left brain thing going on from the start. So I was very fortunate in that respect. So I figured I could go either way. I could go work in the big company or I could do my thing. So now I've done both.
And then you decided, yes, all of it.
But so, yeah, reaching those girls early on is such a big part of what we have to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And if you don't reach them early on, like me, you can be open to different backgrounds in the industry.
Oh, you bet. I you guys have ever read The Medici Effect with... Okay.
The Matilda Effect?
No, The Medici Effect.
Medici Effect.
So Johansson was the author that did this in the late 80s, early 90s. It's an older book, but it was all about the Medici family in Italy, right? And so they built Florence. But the way they did that was they brought architects and artists and engineers and chemists all together to work to build this ultimately beautiful city and city of science and art. And so he talks about the need to bring all those different groups of people together to have the most innovative, to have the breakthrough kind of things happen quicker and more effectively. And so I use that as a talking point in a lot of my talks because I said that's a very powerful thing.
It is.
That interaction between all those different groups and acknowledging that one kind of style of thinking is not the most effective is a great way to build a team. And that's, I try to keep that in mind when I'm putting teams together to work on different projects.
Yeah. That's amazing. I'm going to use that all the time now.
I was like, well, now here's Mercedes' go-to story.
Of course. So we're about out of time for today, but one last question. So looking ahead, what are your goals and aspirations for the future of H&H and your continued impact on the plastics industry? I mean, well, you know, you reach the Hall of Fame and then you can just kind of
if I reached that, I would just skyrocket down.
Do you still have goals? Do you still have bucket lists?
Both my husband and I will continue doing this to keep our minds active, continue working. We're not working full time anymore, but we're doing things that make us happy and we have fun following our passion. We both are passionate about plastics and the plastics industry and a whole myriad of different markets within that. But part of my next chapter is going to be giving back more. So spending more time with the groups from PPA to the hall to SPE, et cetera.
Spending more time. But you're president. Yeah. You're already president.
Yeah. But you know, continuing to do that because it's fun. And I love the people. They're my people, right?
Yeah.
They're the people that I've worked with for the last 40 years.
Yeah.
And I like being with my people. So it's fun.
Yeah, I've noticed the people that you hang around with. They're pretty good people.
They're pretty good.
There's some good eggs. Well, Wendy Hennig, so thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today in this scary little room.
And for the record, if nobody sees her after March 5th, it's not on us.
And we'll see you at the induction to the Hall of Fame.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to Plastics. New episodes appear on the first Friday of every month. So either follow or subscribe to get those new episodes ASAP. Plastchicks, the Voices of Resin, is a plastics podcast sponsored by SPE, Inspiring Plastics Professionals. If you want to find out more about SPE, please visit SPE.org.
Oh, plastics.